Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Yo, metalheads, this is Jimmy Clark, Lars Ulrich, drum tech, Metallica, here at Metal Up Your Podcast, the number one podcast, all things Metallica.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I'm Clint Wells.
This is episode 267. We're going to do the Blacklist part two, where we each take a couple songs, a little analysis of them. We're going to listen through them and have a good time.
How about this Chris Stapleton cover?
That's pretty badass, man.
I'm not really a big fan of his, but I was pulling that up last night and I was like, shit, this
yeah,
is good.
It's really good, man.
It's cool. It's like a little bit of a stoner jam, too. I don't know if you've listened to the whole thing.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
like
definitely.
Eight minutes long.
Yeah, it's a total stoner jam. And I like that he obviously makes it his own, which we've you know, gushed about covers like that where you don't just do it verbatim. And, yeah, makes it his own and also has a good amount of nods, obviously, to the original, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This is easily one of my favorites
what
on
I,
the collection.
What I find interesting hearing covers is when you can hear that they know it well enough to know the like live differences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
like there's a few ways he sings it that James only sings it live.
Yeah,
and I'm
sure.
Like, oh, okay. I wonder either he's a legitimate fan, like a little more than a casual, or when he knew he was going to be doing it, he did like a deep dive into the song.
Yeah, for sure.
And watched like versions of it through the years.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine he would. I get the impression he you know, in his younger years, especially, he was probably a big fan of hard rock and some metal. I remember when I saw him open for Guns N' Roses, and he like geeked out about that on stage. And, you know, he said something like, you know, if I can go back in time and tell my, you know, 15-year-old self that I'd be doing this one day. So he was probably into that kind of music.
Well, that's the thing about Metallica is, like, you don't have to be a metal kid to be into Metallica. They're bigger than that.
Especially songs from the Black Album.
I mean, hence myself.
Yeah.
I listen to maybe 5 to 10 metal bands.
Right.
I'm not a metalhead.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was in a metal band, and I'm not really a metalhead.
I wrote a metal record, and I'm not a metalhead.
A space metal record.
I wrote one of the most legit metal records of the last 25 years.
I would. It's better than Risk. I'll give you that.
So, yeah, it's interesting. I think, and that's obviously the power of the Blacklist. So if you're joining us for the first time, we're an all-Metallica podcast. Ethan and I are two professional touring musicians who make time every week to talk about our favorite metal band, the mighty Metallica.
Oh, yes.
And I'm excited to get through these. I did the math, the actual math, which I don't normally do.
Right.
And we've pretty much either featured or talked about almost every song on this album. We have maybe one more episode that we could do to wrap up the Blacklist. And I didn't even listen to the ones that I selected today, so this is all going to be brand new for me.
Okay, interesting. I listened to each of mine once last night just to kind of get some, you know, pre-thoughts, I guess you could say.
I haven't heard any of these songs except for a little bit of this Juanez tune with Sandman. So today we'll be featuring Juanez, Royal Blood, Cage the Elephant. Those are the bands I've heard of. Volbeat and My Morning Jacket. That's one of my favorite bands. But these other ones I haven't heard of. Pup and the Neptunes I haven't heard of. Tomi Owo and Kamasi Washington.
Yeah.
Were you familiar with all these people?
Almost. I didn't know Pup before, but they're a cool band.
Okay, cool.
Kind of punk rock hardcore band.
All right, well, let's get into it. We have an iTunes and a Patreon. You can leave us a positive review if you like the show. You can also leave us a review now on Spotify.
Cool.
Where you can at least rate the podcast. And good God, we're going to ask you to do it just because it helps us.
That's
a million
exactly
podcasts
right
out there. If you like the show, it's really the least you can do.
It's pretty easy.
I would do it for the podcast. I like, speaking of podcasts, I like my favorite Bob Dylan podcast.
Okay.
the dude reached out to me and asked me to be on the show.
Ooh,
and
that's
we,
cool.
We did. He asked me to pick like my definitive 12-song Bob Dylan Desert Island track list.
Oh wow, like a Clint Wells best of.
Yes. So I did a side A and a side B, 6 songs each sequence.
It's a way to do it, man.
So if any of you out there have been wanting to hear me do a deep dive of Bob Dylan, that's going to be it.
And that's and this is what I love about doing whether it's a playlist, a mixtape, whatever. I look at it, someone says, hey, I need 10 songs by this artist, your favorite ones. I look at it always like a side A and side B. Even in old bands I was in when we were just releasing things on CD, not even vinyl, we still sequenced it like a side A and side B.
Right.
I love doing that because that's important. It's important how side A ends and how side B begins.
Right. Especially on a CD.
Especially on a CD.
This is where you flip the CD over.
It still flows well, which is the important thing.
It's called Bob Dylan Album by Album, and he does like... Obviously, he does album by album, but he does huge deep dives.
Cool.
And he does a lot of research. This British guy. He's like Tom Quee. He's like really smart, really thorough. He's a radio host in the UK.
Cool. Do you know how he... Does he know our podcast, or how did he get in touch with... Not how to get in touch with you, but or why, I guess.
I can't remember. I think I reached out to him on like Twitter, or I just retweeted him, and I think I said, like, this is my favorite Bob Dylan podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
If anyone wants to check it out. Like, I definitely didn't, like... I don't think I emailed him or anything and said, like, hey, I'll, you know. I think I've just interacted with him a few times on Twitter. And so he figured out what we do over here. He said he listens to our show.
Oh, cool. Well, what's up, man?
And it's pretty cool. I think he's doing this with a few other podcasts. He has a Patreon. I think this is going to be on his Patreon at first. Then he's going to put it on his regular show. I think what I'm going to do is take the episode after it lives in his world for a while, and I'm going to put it out as a radio episode.
Cool.
And I'm going to actually intersperse like clips and stuff all in it.
Yeah, I think a lot of our listeners who are, you know, who maybe listen to stuff outside of metal would appreciate and dig that for sure. I'll listen to it.
Well, he did what you and I would do. I mean, he asked me my whole origin story and why did you get into Dylan, what happened, and favorite records and eras. And, of course, with each song was a deep dive, a little mini deep dive into the era it's from and like why it made sense here.
Yeah, great.
So it's pretty fun.
Cool. When's that? Do you know when that's coming out?
I don't know, but I'm sure as soon as it does, I'll be pushing it to all the socials.
Heck yeah.
You can leave us a review on iTunes. That also goes a long way. Really appreciate you doing that. The easiest way to... Oh, wait. I already said that. The Patreon is not the easiest way to support us, but it is the one that will allow you to sleep the best at night.
It's that's
like,
right.
It's like a little medicine at night.
It is. It's like it's digital NyQuil.
Because we just give this stuff away for free.
It's digital melatonin.
We give the good shit away for free.
For free.
We always have. Always will.
Always, yes.
But if you do like the show and you do recognize that this does take a lot of our time and energy, there are associated costs with running a podcast like this. You can support us on Patreon. You'll hear a commercial for it later. It'll tell you what to do. But we do want to say thank you to our new patrons. Some of these are funny. Well, one of them is pretty funny. I'll save that one for last. Jason Billadieu, Ingvar Eriksson, Eric Moore, Voronsky 17, and then someone signed their name simply as a friend of Clint and Ethan.
Who could it be?
But my name's Billy. It doesn't matter what your name is.
Easiest way to get a hold of us is through the email, although we are on all the socials. People send us messages through the socials all the time. Well, I don't know about Facebook. You're over there.
And it's not nearly as often as Instagram or maybe Twitter, but we get them from time to time.
It's probably because I'm not there.
What's that?
It's probably because I'm not there.
They're like,
why would I even bother? Clint's not going to see this.
Clint's not there? Jeez.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Amazon Music, and Spotify. Again, you can leave the... I think all you do is you just rate it like you leave a star. I don't know. I'm not on Spotify. So.
Right, yeah. I've never rated anything on Spotify, but...
Okay.
I can look into it for everybody's inquiring.
The email address is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We will go now into the email portal and hear 6 emails from our listeners. What do you say?
I say let's go. All right, our first email is short and sweet from Matt. He says, hello, brothers. First it was Dave Mustaine, then it was Vince Neil. You need one more person to round out your unholy alliance of shitheads. May I suggest Fred Durst?
You know, I met him one time, and he was actually pretty nice.
I never met him. I met Wes Borland. He was nice. I mean, I don't think... there's no reason to hate this guy.
He does seem like a shithead, but...
He could come... Yeah, I mean, it depends. I don't know. I mean... Well, listen. If someone puts on the song "Rollin'," I'll be bobbing my head.
They have several songs like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nookie's fun.
I guess maybe the whole like egging on the the Woodstock Violence kind of felt like a little shitheady.
Yeah, for sure. But
play and break stuff at kind of a peak moment.
I just don't.
But I also feel like he was just doing his job.
Yeah, he was. And I don't have any kind of memories of like hearing about him multiple times in the news acting like a shithead.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can look up anything, but compared to Mustaine.
I'll tell you what, when I was in high school at the height of my Metallica stuff, I hated them.
Yeah.
I hated the idea of them. I don't think I was super like founded. You know, sure. I think I was like more like snobby.
I never owned their records.
But
or anything.
But having said that, you know, I'm as open minded as I've ever been, I think, about music. Mm-hmm, and sure. I can't imagine listening to a Limp Bizkit album.
It's just
not for me.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that, like I said, if I'm listening to the radio and it comes on, it's like, okay, that was fun.
I could probably name 10. I mean, if Counterfeit's on the radio, fine. If their version of Faith's on,
that's a good one.
Great.
Yeah. That was kind of their breakthrough hit.
What's the song you mentioned?
Rollin'.
Rollin'. They have a handful of songs that I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
They're like
sure.
the band, it makes me think of high school and it makes me think of the band Godsmack too. Whereas, like, I'd be driving to school. We had a really great rock station in Birmingham. I can't even remember what it was. I can't remember the call letters or anything.
Yeah.
Maybe 105.9 The Bear. It doesn't matter. And
The Tide.
My car, I had a 1986 Chevy Nova that didn't even have a tape player.
Whoa.
So I was just bound to that fucking radio.
Just the radio.
Just me and the radio.
Crazy, man.
And I would sort of, my friends and I at the lunch table, we hated Godsmack because they took their name from an Alice song.
Yeah.
And we were big Alice in Chains, like sure. purists. And we were laying all the way, dude. And we thought they were just like butt rock crap. But if like Keep Away, remember the song Keep Away?
I don't really know any of their music. And maybe I'd recognize it if I heard it.
You would recognize Keep. They had a big song called Keep Away.
Okay, I never got into them.
And a big song called Voodoo.
Okay.
Anyway, if it came on, it was like, and my buddies weren't in the car. I was like, this is pretty fun.
I'll turn it up.
But yeah, we hated Limp Bizkit. We hated all, like there were so many bands. We hated Kid Rock.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
The American Badass thing. We just thought it was so, we were so offended.
Right. Like it was personal.
And like it wasn't completely signed off on by the band. Like Lars wasn't loving it, you know?
Right. Yeah, for sure.
They were taking that motherfucker out on tour. It's not like they were bummed about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lars always strikes me as a guy like and this Blacklist kind of plays into that, where anytime like modern bands are paying homage to him, he's mm-hmm. like, I think he loves the idea of other successful artists basically saying, like, Metallica influenced me.
Sure.
I just think that's a drug he can't. And he's also cool. He's cooler than I was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I was like, fuck them. Instead, Lars is like, hey, this is really cool that you like Sad But True.
Yeah.
And you want to collaborate and maybe do something a little different and bring Metallica into your world and to your fans.
Yeah. I mean, the Icons episode is a great, special right. whatever is a great example.
Featuring
of that.
Limp Bizkit.
Limp Bizkit, Snoop Dogg, all of them.
I do got to be honest, Matt. It's a good suggestion, but I do think if we're going to find the third shithead, I'm not sure it's Fred Durst.
I think what usually happens is the shithead finds us.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's not like we're doing a deep dive on shitty things.
The shithead does find
us. Mustaine has said about Metallica, it just comes to us. Okay, so
I mean, Kerry King's kind of a shithead, but he's also innocuous. He also doesn't bother me.
Yeah, it's just kind of whatever. I don't really think about it. We all need to be patient here, okay?
You're right. The shithead will find us.
Yeah.
There's no need to force that one.
But don't worry.
The world's full of shitheads.
The unholy alliance of shitheads will be fully formed one day.
Well, thanks, Matt. Joe Grabarek writes in and says, Happy New Year, guys. Greetings from freezing Manchester, which I'm about to... Dude, I'm going like snow camping this weekend.
Yeah, what day are you leaving?
Today.
Yeah, chance of snow this weekend. Which would be kind of badass to camp in the snow.
We call it Freeze Fest, so we're used to camping in the cold, but we've never camped in like rainy, wet snow.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of trepidation with some of the people in the group going. Yeah. I'm like, fuck it.
Hell yeah. That sounds like a good
time. My wife got me these are heated socks.
Whoa. Do you like charge them or something?
You charge these little battery packs.
Whoa.
Via USB.
Hell yeah. That's cool. I'm legitimately excited about that for you. I thought about that the other day, or it was like whatever it was last week when we got like 6 inches of snow, and me and my wife were walking in our neighborhood, and I had boots on and stuff, but yeah. My feet were still cold.
Yeah,
and I thought to myself, like, surely they make heated socks.
They do, but you got to check these out. These socks, these are like dope thermals.
Okay.
I'm already wearing my thermal socks. No one can see that, and I've done for like below 20 degree camping with these, and my feet are sweating.
Awesome.
They're a little pricey, but they're worth it. I got two pairs of them.
Hey, man, if you want to stay alive.
Because you and I have talked about camping, but you want to do more of the better weather hammock camping.
I mean, Here's my thing.
A hammock. You would die in a hammock in this shit that we're going into.
Oh yeah, for sure. No. I prefer to camp essentially when it's not summertime.
Fall,
spring or fall. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the coldest I've done is probably like when it's gotten out of like 35.
Yeah.
But I'm in like a 0 degree sleeping bag.
Yeah. If you have the right gear, the worst part is the walk from the fire to your tent.
Right. Yeah.
Or if you have to get up and pee.
Yeah. And a lot of times what me and a couple of my friends do is we go camp on one of the islands on the lake out by the airport, Percy Priest Lake.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kayaking out to the island first.
Yeah, I love it. That.
Yeah.
What I did is I got on Amazon. You know that thing that Kevin Costner pees into and it turns into water at the beginning of Waterworld?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the idea of Waterworld and cultural conversation is that it's like one of the worst movies ever.
I love that movie.
I challenge any of you, put it in again.
Yeah.
It's real good.
I think
Waterworld is a good movie.
It's a good movie. I think what happened back in the day when it came out was I think at the time,
mm-hmm.
it was like the most money any movie studio spent on a movie.
And it bombed.
And it bombed.
Yeah.
I'm sure it still made... In our terms, right. good money, but not near enough to pay back.
It's like when Garth Brooks had his alter ego, Chris Gaines,
mm-hmm.
and he put out a record as Chris Gaines, his moody, grungy guy with his hair in his face.
Yeah, so.
And it was a commercial failure because it only sold 3 million copies.
What a loser. Jeez.
Anyway, I got on Amazon and I bought that pee contraption.
Really?
And so when I'm in a cold camp sitch, I just pee into a machine that Kevin Costner actually signed himself,
and it
turns it into water, and then I drink it.
You bought one of these?
Yeah.
This is interesting. I
didn't really buy one. It doesn't really exist.
Dang it. I mean, listen, it's 2022.
I'm trying to make a joke.
This would not surprise me that it did exist. Well, I mean, listen, you just showed me rechargeable socks.
I did show you rechargeable socks.
So it's
actually
not...
the way these work is you pee into these and then you wring it out into your mouth and then that's how they stay heated.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to get some of those.
It's perfect. So anyway, I got through Joe's
Welcome
first
to our
sentence.
Camping podcast.
She says, just finished the latest Fixer Deep Cut dive. This was really awesome. Thanks, guys. Sometimes it's very difficult to hear all these subtleties you brought up. And once you know, these songs just get a whole new depth. Amazing stuff. Just makes you think what geniuses these guys are. It could have just been one of those long songs that become boring, she says, which is an actual opinion I've heard, which is a true crime to me. But instead, you get to intrinsically know another epic creation. Makes me really long for some new stuff from the boys. What do you think? Is there going to be a next album this year?
Who knows? I mean...
We don't know. We don't have any insider information. If I had to bet, I would say no.
I would probably, or I would say maybe by the end of 2022. I mean, I know that a couple of years ago they were kind of saying like, hey, we don't want to wait as long this time around.
Yeah.
But then no one planned for this pandemic. Obviously, that put a halt on a lot of things.
And they also say a lot of shit. I mean, if someone's putting a microphone in front of their face and they're like, so any new music? They're not. They're just not the band that's going to say no.
Right.
They have great media training. They've been the biggest band ever for so long.
Yeah, for sure.
They know when someone's putting a microphone in their face saying, what's going on with new music? They know to say, there's always something cool
happening.
How many times did they say that like in the press, even leading up to the pandemic, where they're like, we want to do it faster this time, and
mm-hmm.
There's heavy stuff. I've heard some heavy riffs from James.
Right, yeah.
We were in the studio... the boys were together at HQ. At this point now, those rumors are like a year old.
Yeah, for sure.
So, are they sitting on an album? I doubt it. Probably not. I mean...
I'd love to be surprised.
Are they doing the thing where they're in the process where we get to see the videos where it looks all instantaneous to us, but like in one, Lars has a huge beard, and another one, it's apparent that a lot of time has gone by. So maybe we're in the middle of that process?
I'd imagine so. I mean... the only thing I'll say to that is this. In the last about year, we've seen more activity at HQ
mm-hmm.
outside of them doing live streams or playing any shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. or Kirk will post a photo where it's clearly the Bay Area or something like that.
Yeah.
So you know he's there.
It's interesting, too, when I think about me as a writer, I tend to, like, get tired of material.
Mm-hmm.
I have to just get it done and get it out. If I'm like working on it for too long, I'm either writing a new batch that I like.
Mm-hmm.
How are you like that at all? Or could you work on an album for 3 years and still be excited about the songs?
Maybe not 3 years.
Because that seems like a long time.
I would say for instance, my album Let It Burn, like I wrote that over the course of a year.
Yeah.
You know, but I wrote most of that like on tour.
But then when you went to record it, you recorded it in a session in a week, right? A week or two.
Yeah, I was in with mixing, I think I was in Paul's studio for about 6 or 7
Like imagine
minutes.
Going to Paul's and doing the drums And then 6 months later, you do some bass, some rhythm.
Yeah.
6 months later, you're, and you still haven't written the words yet.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's how they work.
Yeah.
They write the words last. James writes the words last. It just seems like, and again, they have some of the best songs ever. So maybe that's the key. My little songies feel like chapters that.
That's the key.
I guess the key is if you're writing Master of Puppets, you can keep coming back to it.
Also, that you know, that is sometimes one of the downsides of having your own studio. You're not
paying for the time.
You're not on any kind of time crunch.
I mean, you're paying to keep the lights on. But
of course, you know, when they're in one-on-one for two albums, it's like, yeah, they're still there for a while.
Yeah.
But they're paying for it.
Dude,
you know?
I just realized the other day that my favorite Dave Matthews album, Before These Crowded Streets, was recorded at the Plant in Sausalito.
Oh, cool.
So just add that to the list of like some of my favorite albums that were made there.
Shoot.
It must have been a really happening place in the 90s.
Probably, yeah. I listened to Crash a couple times in a row the other day.
What'd you think?
I love that record. Well, I got it on cassette while we were on the road, and that's the thing I love about cassettes is in the car, like auto flip, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And so once it ends, like I've had Full Moon Fever in my car for two days straight, and that's just what I'm listening to.
When I'm rocking cassettes in here with my Teak, I have the auto reverse on both ways. So if it's an album that I really want to do that with, I'll just burn it down several times, especially if it's like a shorter, like a metal album is great for that.
Yeah, for sure.
I will say this about Crash. I mean, here's what makes that album so great. You've got a band on their sophomore effort coming off a lot of debut success.
Mm-hmm.
And the first three Dave albums are all of his best songs because
absolutely.
He wrote them all when he was before he got signed. And it's just there's just something about that fire that he was early 20s and he wrote all those songs that made up his first couple of albums. The weird thing about Crash, honestly, is it does not sound good. It's not recorded well.
The production is it's
Steve Lillywhite too. It's like weird, and he did the first album, which does sound really good.
Yeah,
but for some reason, I've talked to Dan Cantor about
it's kind of thin sounding in a way.
Like, if you listen to Two Step and headphones, here's why the album is great, because those songs are so powerful.
Yeah.
I get it. There are people rolling their eyes because they don't like Dave Matthews, but I don't give a shit. But if you kind of understand their music and you understand what makes records sound good,
sure.
If you listen to it with headphones, it is weird. Like, there's some weird choices where it's like, this doesn't sound very good.
Yeah. I'll throw it on the cans.
I don't want to discourage you because I'm glad you're listening to it.
Here's the thing, like I think maybe an album like Death Magnetic is proof of this. There can be sonic issues on albums, and I think it can be easy to ignore if the songs are quality. So
I've just found it like more of a curiosity. I'm like, how did they come off their debut so successfully that sound and an album that does sound good?
Yeah,
with the same producer,
right?
You know what I think probably it is? A little tangent here.
Okay.
Which I know we're on a tight schedule this morning. Steve Lillywhite, and I'm very... Me and you and Paul had a long text about this, about Rick Rubin. I'm skeptical of guys who produced records who are not musicians and who don't know the gear. Because Steve Lillywhite's kind of famously like, I don't know what a compressor is.
Yeah.
I'm like, you don't know what a compressor is? And you've produced like U2 and...
Right.
He produced my favorite Guster record, Lost and Gone Forever.
It's pretty crazy.
And I think that kind of explains why Crash maybe sounded like shit, because he didn't know it sounded bad.
Yeah.
And he was, it's one thing for Paul, who himself is an engineer.
Yes.
To tell his guys that we love, shout out to those dudes.
Yeah.
Zach and Brandon and Sam.
Yeah.
He knows to tell them, they're capable engineers.
Of course.
That's why they work for Paul. But Paul knows if something's squirrely with a microphone, he'll hear it. I've seen them work that out.
It happened. I was in there for 3 days working on this EP for this girl, and it happened. And I was like, I don't even hear what he's talking about.
I mean, I hear it usually when he draws attention to it, I'll notice it.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But I wouldn't be able to. Like Paul will be like, hey, do you have an API on this kick drum, or is that a 1073? And Zach will be like, it's a 1073. And then Zach will be like, oh, wait, it is an API. Yeah, I got those lines switched.
Yeah.
I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, that's that's a plus side of owning your own studio. You know every little piece of gear that's in there and how it works.
But I think it's also the benefit of a producer who has had instruments in his hand. Like, Paul can play any instrument.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen him play drums.
He doesn't play drums.
But he can play, like, someone gave him a sitar recently, and he can play sitar.
Yeah. That's actually his second sitar now.
he's a beautiful keys player. He's got a beautiful touch on keys.
Great, yeah.
And then, of course, I know him as a guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And not that Crash sounds like a garage record. It's not like a Misfits record. Sure. It sounds good, but comparatively. And it's because I'm skeptical of these guys. Rick Rubin, you know how I feel about Rick Rubin.
Sure, yeah.
I think he's cool but overrated. And who's the other big one? Jimmy Iovine.
The dude
who did Damn the Torpedoes and Stevie Nicks records.
The dude that told Tom Petty that Free Fallin' wasn't a hit.
No.
Was that not him?
No.
Am I mixing up? What am I mixing up?
No, he's the hero of that story. The president of the record label said that there were no hits on Full Moon Fever.
That's what it was. That's
Jimmy Iovine, who wasn't even working with Tom anymore, because Jeff Lynne produced that album.
Yes.
Jimmy Iovine did Damn the Torpedoes in the 70s.
Yeah.
That's Tom Petty's third album.
Right.
He was just friendly. He recorded Tom Petty's most successful album of the 70s, mm-hmm. which is Damn the Torpedoes, because of a song called Refugee.
Yeah, not a bad one.
But he just stayed in touch. So when he heard that Tom's like record label woes in the 80s, because Full Moon Fever is late 80s, right?
89, I think, yeah.
So when he heard about that, he heard Full Moon Fever. I guess they were friendly enough to where Tom sent it to him. And he said, yeah, the record label executive, CEO, or whoever, the president, doesn't hear a single, and they're threatening to not put it out.
Jeez.
And Jimmy Iovine wrote him a letter and said, you should resign immediately.
Well,
album has Running Down a Dream, I Won't Back Down, and Free Falling,
yeah.
And I think You're So Bad.
You're So Bad's on there.
So
I mean, like I said, I've listened to that record for the last 2 or 3 days, and I don't think there's not one song on there that I'm like, it's okay.
I would submit to you all that Tom Petty doesn't have any bad songs. I mean, you could maybe come up with 5 if you do his entire like 20 album discography since the 70s.
Right, right.
But his output at such a high level, I think Sting's really similar.
Yeah.
Now, there are songs that I don't gravitate towards.
Sure.
But just as a craftsman, mm-hmm. craftsperson, they're all good.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of artists out there that are like that.
Like, I'll tell you this.
Bruce Springsteen, I feel the same way about. I mean,
I don't know his. I mean, I'm a huge fan. Sure. And the records that I've let into my heart are in deep.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be able to. I don't know. You could name. I don't know what songs are on Lucky Town.
Right.
I don't know what songs are on Human Touch. I don't know. But I tell you what artists I do know, even their bad shit, is I know Bob Dylan, mm-hmm. who made some stuff that's questionable.
Sure.
And Neil Young has some really questionable, albums, but eras.
Yeah, for sure.
Who would be for you a band that they're good, their peaks are almost as high as they get for you, which is me for Dylan.
Yeah.
But their lows are
real
devastating.
I'm going to say...
Like, does The Clash have anything horrible?
Yeah, oh yeah. Their final record was
called... You told me about that one.
Cut the Crap, yeah. It's like a cool album title. Like,
Love the title.
Artwork is rad and stuff.
Cut
but
the Crap.
The songs are really bad.
Like, it's like a Oh How the Mighty Have Fallen vibe?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, this was them coming off what became their biggest record, Combat Rock, with had Rock the Casbah on it, Should mm-hmm. I Stay or Should I Go?
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, what on earth is this?
To me, Rock the Casbah is a complete head scratcher because that's all I know of The Clash.
Yeah.
And when all my like punk rock friends are all, you know, I mean, also when I was a kid, I could see Eddie Vedder, obviously Joe Strummer is like his hero.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, it must be really fucking gritty and like punk rock. And then I'm like, Rock the Casbah?
Yeah, Rock the Casbah, yeah.
It's so strange.
Like, maybe we can do a deep dive on The Clash one day, but one of the things I love about that band and what Joe Strummer did was every record was different.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what great artists do.
And they did it successfully, like, other than their very last record. I mean, put on anything before Cut the Crap. And now there's Clash fans out there that will defend Cut the Crap. Much like there's Metallica fans that will defend Seeing Anger.
Mm-hmm. Cut the Crap.
You know what I mean? But I mean, anything off London Calling or whatever, like, you know, there were a few. Sandinista is there, like, they did a triple album called Sandinista. And to me, in my opinion, there are some lows on there that are just weird because it's so many songs.
Mm-hmm.
But there's guys out there that are like, I love everything off that. So it just depends. But that's still a high point, though.
Interesting. Well, all right. Well, Joe goes on to say, anywho, thanks for the episode and for the past 5 years worth of podcasts. I know we don't know each other from Adam, but in a weird world is a global village kind of way. I'm so happy to have friends like you, and in line of so many peeps before me, your friendly banter really helps me to recharge my batteries every day, much like my socks over here.
Exactly.
Currently charging the batteries. For someone who suffers from clinical depression and leading life full of shitty stresses, your quote-unquote ray of light is so important and so much appreciated. Is that a little nod to little Madonna?
Madonna,
there?
Yeah.
That's my favorite era of Madonna.
Ray of Light.
That's my favorite Madonna song.
Interesting.
And okay. I love that album. Because that album had Beautiful Stranger.
Okay.
Remember that song? Remember the song Frozen?
I was pretty checked out with Madonna at that point. I liked, you know, 80s into early 90s Madonna.
Yeah.
Obviously, 80s Madonna, it's like, and you know, me growing up in the 80s.
You're like a virgin and stuff?
Yeah, borderline, all that stuff. Right. Like, my sisters got into that stuff, and I was
the early
like,
90s, dude, Like a Prayer?
That's a great.
Great song.
Great song.
Yeah. She says, professional help can do lots, but I guess you're just this little star that is shining there whenever it's raining and dark in my life, and I crave a bit of light. Anywho, happy 2022 once again. Send greetings to
Paul,
Torben, Michael Bolton, dear mother and father, Time,
ooh,
which is Kronos, I believe.
Time. Yes. It's Kronos.
I see Kronos! Tumbleweed Ron and the rest of the family, love and Metallica always. Joe from Manny, UK. New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Well, Joe, the you know, I'm sorry to hear that you struggle from depression and that your life is stressful, and but of course grateful to hear that me and Ethan can be a ray of light for you. It means a lot to us.
It really does. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for writing in, man. All right, next email is from Jason Bilodeau, who is a new patron, of course. Hey, fellas. Big fan of the show. Came online in late 2021 when Metal Beer Podcast popped up on my Spotify after listening to the first episode of Metallica Podcast Volume 1. That's really cool. See, that's like we're talking about earlier. This is where ratings help and things like that get suggested.
Right.
So this is why Jason found us. Man, I wish I had come across it so much sooner. I burned through the first 70 or so episodes and jumped ahead to the most recent 10 or so. Now I'm going through the entire catalog. Awesome stuff.
It's got to be weird for people who are just getting on the ride now, and then they look and see that they're 5 years.
Right, yeah.
Because I don't even know who we were 5 years ago.
I don't either. We were some dumb ice-crunching idiots, right?
Now we're just dumb idiots who don't crunch ice.
That's right. Apparently, I did on one of the 40th anniversary shows.
Oh, really?
I couldn't remember if it was a comment on a post or something, but someone said, looks like the ice crunching came back. I must have just kind of... I don't know, whatever. I don't remember
doing
that.
They're coming for blood, dude. They don't let us off the hook for shit.
Bring it on, man. you know how calloused I am after all the shit I've endured with this podcast?
Oh, my God. A 2.5 episode of joy that we laboringly put out. And they're like, nope, sounds like the ice crunch is back.
What is this, 2017? Anyways, Jason goes on to say, I've been a Metallica fan for most of my life, more than 35 years now.
Wow.
Went to the local record store to buy some metal albums / cassettes in July of 86 to spend money for my 12th birthday and saw the Ride Lightning cover art. Bought that at Master of Puppets, which had come out a couple months before. Been a crazy fan ever since. So he wants to share with us his top 10 albums and top 10 songs.
Let's hear him.
Top 10 albums. Number 10, Saint Anger. Number 9, Load.
Boo.
Number 8, Death Magnetic. I'll say boo to that. Number 7, Kill 'Em All. Number 6, Hardwired. Number 5, Reload. Number 4, Black Album. 3, Justice. 2, Puppets. And 1, Lightning.
Cool.
Top 10 songs. 10, Fade to... 1, 9, Fade to Black. 8, Seek and Destroy. 7, Sabbath True. Number 6, Sanitarium. Number 5, Eye of the Beholder. Number 4, Creeping Death. Number 3, Master Puppets. Number 2, Black. And number 1, For Whom the Bell Tolls.
Creeping Death in the top 5.
It's pretty cool.
I'm sorry, not Creeping Death. That is top 5, but I was thinking of Eye of the Beholder.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Interesting
that's
for five. That song to be in the top 5. Yeah,
for real. Anyways, Jason ends his email by saying, keep doing what you're doing. Love the podcast. Much love to you both as artists. Sidebar, Ethan, this is me. He's talking to me. Been a Demon Hunter fan a long time. Finally got to see them at Heavy Montreal in 2018. Too bad you weren't still playing with them. Cheers, Jason. Well, I haven't played with them since 2008, but very proud of the two records I did. If you want to check them out, called The Triptych and Storm the Gates of Hell.
The Triptych.
Triptych.
That means three dicks.
That's right.
The cover's just three dicks.
Or
that's actually how they hunted the demon on that album, is they sent three dicks after them.
Well, the logo, what most people think is a bullet hole in the head. That's actually the penis actually crush the skull.
Oh my gosh, earmuffs.
Earmuffs, jeez. You're the one that talked about three dicks.
I had PG-13, maybe a little like coming of age high school story, super bad. You went to like some dark NC-17 shit, like the penis penetrated a skull so hard.
Oh, I didn't say penetrated.
You couldn't find the word. I know.
I almost did. That's why.
Okay, all right. Their next email is from a friend of Clint and Ethan, who's also a new patron. Hey, brothers, longtime listener, and would quickly like to thank both you both and Paul for all the great work you do at HQ3. The three of you do more for the community than provide an outlet for our Metallica needs, specifically in my case, driving. I have no father figure to help me through the nerves of driving, but what really helped were your familiar voices, jokes, and bits. Suddenly, I didn't feel so alone in the hectic driving of LA. I'm sure Ethan can attest to that.
Yes.
Well, I've visited LA quite a few times myself.
You've been on the freeways there.
I've been in traffic.
You only need to be in LA traffic one time to understand how much it sucks.
It's pretty rough.
I mean, I remember years and years ago, I was friends with a Laker girl, no big deal. Mm-hmm. She would get me into games for free, which mm-hmm. was awesome. And one time she invited me. I left my house at 10 in the morning because I was going to go grab lunch with a friend in L.A. Because where I lived at the time, it took me about, with a little bit of traffic, about 2 hours to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in traffic for 7. I was in traffic the entire way to the Staples Center. Sorry, the Crypto.com Arena.
Jesus. Well, that's what Skip Bayless calls the Crypt.
The Crypt. See, that sounds cooler, at least.
Because the Lakers suck this year.
And they do kind of suck. But yeah, I feel your pain, man.
He says, I hope 2022 treats you well. So far, it's been amazing for me this week and will be even better on February 25th at the Allegiant Stadium in Vegas, where Metallica will take the stage, where they're also playing with Billy Joel.
Awesome.
That's that show.
Yeah, that's rad.
They're not playing the same night.
Yeah, but different nights.
Different nights. Two different nights. It will be my first time seeing Metallica ever, in the pit, no less. And I hope they do something special, considering James is a Raiders fan. Fingers crossed. Keep up the great work. Here's to more peaceful drives with you both from Los Angeles, California, New Jersey.
Oh, so beautiful.
Well, thank you, a friend of Clint and Ethan. Appreciate that. And
friend
I'm glad.
Of Clint and Ethan from LA.
I'm glad we can help you on your drives in a stressful driving situation. I remember my. My first ever van tour, I was with dudes about 10 years older than me, and this is a Miami story.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never been to Miami. I actually had never been to a lot of the cities. This was my first time doing many cities on this tour. I was maybe 19, and we were pulling into Miami in rush hour. 15-passenger white van, classic tour van,
sure,
trailer full of gear. I'd never driven either. And I was remarking to the guy driving, I was like, man, I don't know how you're going to drive into this traffic with all this stuff. I was like, you're a better man than me.
Yeah.
He pulled over on the exit ramp and was like, you're doing it.
Oh.
And I was like, dude, I'll crash. I don't know how to do it. I can't do it. I'll jackknife the I was like, dude, I can't. I was like, I get. And he was like, if you're not going to drive us to the venue, I guess we're just not going to get there. And it was just one of those like teachable, like,
yeah,
they made
the coming of age.
They made the kid do it. And, dude, I swear to God, I was, like, going to have a fucking heart attack.
So that's where Clint the boy became Clint the man.
He was like, I'll sit up there with you. I'll walk you through it. I was like, white-knuckle tight, fuel, you know, like.
Which, it's funny to me, like, after doing years of van and trailer touring, going into traffic actually, to me, was like, oh, okay, no problem. I mean, it sucks to be in traffic. But, like, what made me most nervous when I first started driving a van and trailer was driving at 70 miles an hour.
Mm.
That's what made me nervous.
Right.
You know, not, I mean, going in traffic, it's kind of like, okay, but, you know, we're going slow.
I guess I was worried about, no, I'm the same way. Like, I actually don't get nervous about any kind of driving now, but this right. is probably why. But I was more worried about, like, depth perception with the trailer and, like, merging.
Changing lanes and stuff,
and, like, just being able to navigate. I've had some drives where there's no traffic, but I'm on, like, a rainy, I'm in the Pacific Northwest on, like, a mountainside, mm-hmm. and it's raining, and everybody in the van's asleep, and I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, we're really close to death.
Yeah, I've been there, yeah, for sure.
These guys don't even actually know how close we are to death, because they're sleepy tie-tie.
Yeah.
I'm driving. I'm the only one up, and I'm good to go, but I'm real tired, and anything could happen.
We always had a rule in the van, which whoever's riding shotgun has to stay awake with the driver.
Yeah.
Driver picks the music, navigator / keep the driver awake.
Yeah.
You know, and then rotate and go tie-tie.
Yeah. It's a good policy.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Well, thanks a friend of us.
Thanks a friend of me. And you.
Next email is from Dennis Breedeman. It says, hey guys, I've had a few weeks to decompress from the 40th anniversary shows and just wanted to say how great it would have been if there was a Metal Up Your Podcast get together out there. Well, we're sorry we couldn't make it out there. We would have made it happen. My wife and I still managed to run into a few Metal Up Your Podcast personalities over the weekend, though. We bumped into Chris Yurgis, Metallica Claus, of course, on our way to Friday night show, and he was cool enough to chat with us for a bit. He's from our home state of Wisconsin. Later, I saw a guy in a Lunar Satan t-shirt. Hell yeah. Struck up a conversation with him, only to find out it was Chris
Kakamis.
And we talked for a while about his work on Lunar Satan. Later in the weekend, I saw Sarah Sobek hanging out in the lobby of our hotel, so I had to say hi just to complete the Metal Beat Podcast trifecta. I don't know if it's all Metallica fans or just the Metal Beat Podcast family, but these three were gracious enough to take the time to talk to a complete stranger on a busy weekend filled with other places to be. Those experiences really helped to make my first Metallica shows even more memorable. I'm generally kind of a loner, but I'm starting to get this whole community thing. Thanks for all you guys have done to help forge that community. Well, that's really cool, man.
Well, I can tell you about those three in particular, Chris Yurgis, Chris Kakamis, and Sarah. Those are actually like friends of ours in real life that like have our numbers and stuff, and we hang out with you know, without Metallica.
Oh, and, yeah, and they're a part of the Sweetie Pie Club.
Any of those people who've made it into my world are all cool, because I don't hang out with shitheads. I'm the only shithead in my...
Listen, if we're going to have a community, it only has one shithead. I'm going to be the shithead.
Exactly. Was that great? There's actually a great joke about that that's like, you know, they say there's an asshole at every party. I still haven't met him yet. You know,
yeah, that's good.
Like, you're the asshole.
You're the asshole. Yeah.
I just butchered it. It's better than that. All right. Our last email, Adam Pastor says, good day. How do, brothers? How do? My name is Adam Pastor. I've been a longtime listener, but a first time visitor to the email portal. Well, welcome. I just want to start by saying thank you for providing and cultivating this community for us folks who love all things Metallica. My question slash request comes after spending some time in Tangent City. The episodes with Paul are always some of my favorites, and the banter and wisdom you guys all contribute is endlessly fascinating and enjoyable all the while. A lot of it can be completely separate from Metallica. As an aspiring session musician, I'm totally intrigued by the insight that you guys have and your nuanced convos on the music industry, touring life, road stories, recording, and just shooting the breeze in general. I guess what I'm alluding to is the possibility of you guys having another podcast where you guys just go full Tangent City and don't have to always be under the Metallica umbrella, but talk about other stuff as well. Kind of like this emo corner, by the way.
It's like the first 45 minutes of this episode.
Of course, Metallica is what's brought all of us to the dance, but the reason we stay is because you guys are the best duo and sometimes trio in the game. Anyway, to close out, I hope 2022 is a banger year for you guys, and I wish you nothing but prosperity and success. Much love and respect, Adam from Corona, California, New Jersey. P.S., congratulations to Ethan on getting to play the Ryman.
Circle of life.
It moves us all. Well, what can we say? This Tangent City idea, let's just say that that might happen. Who knows?
Who knows?
There might be conversations about that already happening. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe that email is willing it right now. We don't know.
We don't know.
We're going the route that Metallica goes with, are you making a new album? We don't know.
You know,
there's been talk.
You know, I think it might be our like heaviest riff ever.
Yeah, I mean,
there might be our best podcast ever coming up.
Exactly. I mean, I was with Paul the other day, and he agreed.
Well, thanks, Adam. I really appreciate all those kind words.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I actually agree with you. My favorite episodes to do are the Tangent Cities, because we can talk about Metallica, and we often do. Even when you take the reins off, we still end up talking about Metallica.
Of course.
Because they're our favorite band. But I do like the freedom to talk about other stuff, and it is really fun to just shoot the shit with you guys, because you guys are some of my best friends. I love
Absolutely.
You guys.
I love you, man.
All right, well, we're going to get out of the email corner. If you do want to hear your shit read on the show, all you got to do is write in metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We do give preference to the patrons. It's one of the benefits you get over there. You'll hear a commercial for the Patreon right now. If you are willing and able to give us $5-$10 a month, it goes towards the giveaways that we do, which we're giving away a deluxe Black Album box set. We're giving away some water bottles that Ethan's buddies donated to the show. And it helps us with all the associated costs of putting up our website. When we make all the cover artwork blackens, we like to pay the people who help us do it, who mix and master it, who provide the artwork. When we throw parties, when we go to shows, all of our giveaways. If you want to just put back into the sauce of Metal Up Your Podcast, Patreon's the way to do it.
That's the way to go.
Plus, you get a whole bunch of stuff over there. We don't make it, we make it easy for you guys over there.
Oh, yeah.
So let's hear that now, and then we'll listen to the Blacklist.
Let's do it.
Hey everyone, Clint and Ethan here, and we want to tell you about a little thing called Patreon. Patreon is an easy and interactive way to support the people who make the things that you love.
For as little as $5 a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast can continue to grow in quality and content. That's equivalent to a cup of coffee or a beer once a month.
Not only is it easy and affordable, but we've made it a priority since day one to give back to our Patreon community. We've given away deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, Black and Whiskey,
concert tickets to S&M2 and Slane Castle,
all four of our Cover Our World Black and EPs, 26 quarantine covers, and Lunar Satan demos,
invitations to exclusive Zoom happy hours, the ability to ask our guests like Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, Lizzie Hale, and members of the Metallica crew your very own questions,
and eligibility for our Metal Tales series, where you can be a guest on Metal Up Your Podcast and tell us all about a notable Metallica show you've been to.
Subscribe to Patreon today and immediately get access to years worth of bonus content.
Thank you for supporting the people who make the things that you love. Peace.
Adios.
I can't talk about it anymore. It's giving me a headache.
Here, take two of these. Ah, Nuprin. Little. Yellow. Different.
I guess we're going to get started with you. We're more or less going to go chronologically, although a couple of the songs we've knocked out because of Wolf and Man, there was only one cover.
Right, yeah.
And we listened to Avi's, which is one of the best ones on the whole album. And
absolutely.
I'm not just saying that because he's our buddy.
It's just the truth.
It's just the stone cold truth.
And that's the bottom line, because stone cold said so.
We've also taken out God That Failed, because we hit all those. Struggle Within, we covered, and there's only one of those.
Right.
That was that instrumental one, the kind of cool, you know, Latin thing.
Yeah. They were fucking badasses.
What else is missing up here? Are those the only ones that are missing? My Friend of Misery, we've also covered all of those.
No, we got one on here.
Oh, no, that's the Kamisi Washington one.
Yep.
You're right. Okay, is that all then? So we've taken out Of Wolf and Man, we've taken out Struggle, and we've taken out God That Failed.
Yes.
And then I think today's episode will end up getting some of these out too. So we're more or less going chronologically, but obviously it's some are gone.
Yeah, exactly.
And then I think when we do the wrap up to kind of conclude, that one's going to, we're going to have to listen to a couple of different versions of Nothing Else Matters.
Yeah, of course. Because there's only like 25 of them.
I guess the way they did is they let a lot of bands choose. And
yeah.
So of course the two most chosen songs are Sandman and Nothing Else Matters.
Right.
So I didn't even realize there's a Darius Rucker Nothing Else Matters.
Yeah.
I haven't heard it. Have you heard it?
I listened to it at one point.
It's a Mickey Guyton one, too.
I don't really remember. I've gravitated towards just maybe 8 to 10 that I think are really great.
Well, let's start with you. So this is the song that leads off the trailer for The Blacklist.
Yeah, Juan S.
So what can you tell us about Juan S?
Well, Juan S, first of all, Juan S's charity that he chose is called Mi Sangre Foundation.
Okay, what do they do?
So he's from Colombia. So they benefit youth at risk. So they work with a lot of kids, a lot of them, you know, specifying in music and stuff like that, like getting them into creative things and stuff
awesome.
Like that to get kids off the streets and stuff like
That's
that.
That's very cool.
It's very cool. But check this out. Juan S. was once a member of a band called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, Ecchymosis,
okay.
Which is a thrash metal band from Colombia that released 8 albums.
Wow.
Now he's a solo Latin pop artist, and he's won 3 Latin Grammys, and he's currently one of Latin's top-selling artists.
Actually, I read a little bit about him. He's won 3 Grammys.
Yeah.
He's won 20 Latin Grammys.
20 Latin Grammys?
Yes.
Well, then...
He's won 3 like normal Grammys.
My source was incorrect.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, either way, I went and checked out his old band, Ecchymosis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's real like 80s, early 90s thrash. I mean, kind of Slayer vibes, early Testament, things
Ooh,
like that.
Wow. Weird.
I mean, super interesting, but obviously big Metallica fan.
Well, I've only known him as, because I used to look at these like guitar catalogs when I was working in guitar stores, and they had always had like the endorsement pictures that I
right.
dreamed of being in, but it'd be like, Kerry King, of course he doesn't play Fender, Eric Clapton or John Mayer, whatever
right,
it was.
Yeah.
And there was always, Juan S. was always featured in these.
Yeah.
And I guess because they were smart enough to like know that like, well, he's an international. He may not have been huge in the States,
yeah,
but
he's making a way as elsewhere.
Huge
for sure.
in Colombia. And so,
yeah.
And I guess I always knew him as a guitar guy.
Yeah.
Which makes sense that he was a metalhead.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a pop guy, but he's a guitar guy too, right?
Oh, yeah. No, he's a great guitar player. Yeah.
He's not like Enrique Iglesias.
No.
Who's
no.
of a singer.
Right. Right.
He's a, like a
Or Julio.
Or Julio Iglesias,
yeah.
Of course, his father.
Exactly. But you know, I checked out some of his pop stuff. It's I mean,
is it guitar driven?
Yeah, there's a lot of cool like acoustic guitar stuff, and it's very Latin sounding. But yeah, let's check out his
Here's
cover.
Here's his Inner Sandman.
I love how this starts.
It's very jerky. Oh, got the chorusy main riff in there.
Yeah.
I haven't heard this.
I just heard it the first time last night.
I'm going to crank it a little bit.
All you can handle, bro.
So the main riffs are intact, but it's a little...
It's like real choppy.
It's more choppy. It's like Devo.
See, I dig this part of it. There's some verbatim parts that are kind of whatever, but...
Yeah, His voice kind of sounds like the Ghost guy.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, it's like, is it funky? I can't think of the word for it. Is it funky that I'm thinking of? It's kind of got like a bounce to it.
I almost feel like with that choppy thing they're doing, they could have maybe elaborated more on something like that. Because in the pre-chorus, they just go straight into the how it is on the album.
I like the guys trying to do the James
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, because it sounds... They're definitely featuring one guitar in the middle.
Yeah.
They're not split.
Right.
There are other guitars, but here we go. That's a Strat.
Yeah. It's a weird solo. It's mostly like Kirk's, but
yeah, it's interesting. It doesn't have the oomph.
Yeah.
It's a little too clean or something.
Does it almost feel like they rushed it or something?
Yeah, it wasn't like pocketed. Obviously, he's got a touch.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's got a good play. He can play.
Yeah.
I like this part. I love a good flanger.
Oh, yeah.
That's not chorus. That's a flange.
That's a flange.
Yeah. I was listening to Dark Side of the Moon the other day. That song Breathe,
oh,
you know what I'm talking about? That
E
minor, A minor, just with that 70s
really slow
flange.
Woo. I bought a flanger off of Michael Wagner when he sold his gear in
studio.
Which
one?
MXR flanger from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
Has like that hardwired cable on it.
Yeah.
And the first thing I did was turn the rate down real slow and just play E minor to A minor.
Yeah, that's like the sound. That's the sound.
Yeah.
It's like Voodoo Child with a wah.
Yeah, totally.
The flanger sound is Pink Floyd Breathe.
Yeah.
What do you give this out of 10?
Honestly, like a 5.
Yeah, I'm going to give it way lower. 3.
A 3, yeah.
I mean, it's competent. It's a competent cover.
Yeah.
Why would I ever listen to it again?
I mean, the dude's obviously very talented.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're not denying that at all.
It's pretty sleepy.
It's just kind of boring to me.
Yeah, it's pretty sleepy.
I just think maybe that cool choppy thing could have gone a lot further.
The choppy thing's the most interesting thing about it.
It almost makes you want to move a little bit, you know?
I have yet to hear a cover of Inner Sandman that was good. I think that my hot take is that it would have been a song that a lot of these bands gravitated towards, obviously because it's a huge hit.
Yeah.
Everyone grew up playing that. That's the thing, is everyone grew up playing that riff.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the Smoke on the Water of the 90s.
Yeah,
it's
for sure.
It's the Stairway to Heaven. It's the song that every guitar center or every guitar store, to this day,
you're
still hearing that riff.
I mean, in the early, when this came out, I remember being in guitar stores and either hearing this or someone going,
I was there, as you were, and I'm like recalling now.
The same store?
Just in that, you know what I mean.
Yeah, for sure.
The songs you mostly heard were Smoke on the Water.
Yeah.
Inner Sandman, definitely Teen Spirit, but I also remember hearing almost as much as Teen Spirit, if not more, Come As You Are.
Yeah.
Because anyone can play it.
It's a really simple thing to play,
And the same with Smoke on the Water, and even the same with Inner Sandman. That's actually the genius of it is, I mean, how many guitar players did that song? It's like Kiss with Shock Me or something. Mm-hmm. It's like how many, or Jimmy Page with Heartbreaker.
Yeah.
Although that's hard to play. Actually, the main riff isn't.
Yeah.
How many fucking guitar players owe everything to those riffs.
I mean, and that's one of the exciting things.
Iron Man.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Of course. Satisfaction by the Stones. So easy.
Right.
And that's one of the beauties of being a young guitar player and learning these things is once you are able to play it correctly and you're playing it like it is on the album, it does nothing but inspire you to learn more.
Yeah. And I use this phrase, it unlocks a door.
Yeah, absolutely does.
Having said all that, I think so a lot of these artists are like, oh yeah, so I'll do Sandman. Mm-hmm. But I think once you get in the studio, you're like, fuck, what are we going to do? I mean,
yeah.
What can you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know what we mean you should do cover our We're Black and Five? We should really cook up something weird for Sandman.
I think it'd be awesome.
Because so far, the Ghost one, and I love Ghost.
Yeah.
Boring. I'll never listen to it again.
Yeah.
This Juanez one, I can't imagine listening to it again. It gets a 3 out of 10.
The Weezer one is verbatim. It's just
horrible. That's the worst one so far.
And this is one of those songs I feel, you know, that it needs to be, you need to kind of cross genres and try something new. And
Because it's pretty hard to beat the original on any of these.
I don't
know if beating the original is a fair bar to set. But it needs to be, like, we've listened to some that, like, some of those, that one, My Friend of Misery, I can't, Imelda, whatever.
Imelda May, yeah.
The Biffy Clyro, Holier Than Thou.
Off's Holier Than Thou. That's one of the best ones.
Like, some of these really have kind of made it into, like, re-listenability for
me.
Yeah,
for sure.
Where I'm like, there's value in listening to, because it's like, there's a sense to where it's like, well, if I'm in the mood to listen to Inner Sandman, I'm going to go to the source.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because they did a real good job recording that one.
Like, you remember the movie I Am Sam, all the Beatles covers?
I know it well, yes.
Right. Great covers on there. Really good covers.
Some of them are.
Yeah. Like Rufus Wainwright's Across the Universe is awesome.
Yeah.
But if I really want to listen to Across the Universe.
No. Yeah. I don't even listen to Rufus's, and I love his.
Right. Yeah.
I don't really listen to covers that much.
Yeah.
Howie Day does a good version of Help that mm-hmm. I like because he slows it down, makes it sad.
Yeah.
Eddie Vedder's You Gotta Hide Your Love Away is great on that.
Jacob Dylan did...
Who did Two of Us? There's a good version of Two of Us on that.
Oh, yeah.
Sheryl Crow does Blackbird.
Forgot about Two of Us on there.
Fuck, I can't think of who does it. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Okay, I chose for Sabbath Shoe, I chose Royal Blood.
Awesome.
And
awesome band.
English rock duo formed by Mike Kerr and Ben Thatcher in 2011. They're kind of famously, it's just a guy playing bass and then a guy on drums, but he plays his bass with all these effects, so it's heavy.
It's really, yeah.
They're like a heavy duo.
Yeah, for sure.
And I thought it was pretty cool that Lars is a huge fan, which won't surprise anybody. Mm-hmm. He's always been very good about, he's just a music lover.
Yeah, and his son's band is bass and drums.
His son's band, so he says that his oldest son's first band, which isn't the current band.
Right.
They had 6 Royal Blood covers in their set. So he said basically his kids found it and then, of course, kicked it up to him. And he said his whole family became fans.
Yeah, cool.
And that when they played San Francisco for the first time, because he's Lars Ulrich, he was able to, like, go to the show, meet them.
Mm-hmm.
And he said he ended up with his sons driving them around the Bay Area, like, showing them all the landmarks.
Wow, cool.
So just imagine for everyone, really except Lars. So Lars's kids are, like, they're like, fuck Metallica. We get to hang out with Royal Blood.
Yeah.
The Royal Blood guys, who are like everyone else in the world, huge Metallica fans, who just grew up loving Metallica, they're like, we made something that Lars Ulrich likes, and he's coming to our show, and he's a fan, and he wants to drive us around?
He wants to give us a tour of the Bay Area? Oh, yeah. It's a win-win for everybody there.
Their charity is the Chestnut Treehouse, which provides care for children and young people who have life-shortening conditions in Sussex and Southeast Hampshire.
Cool.
So a pretty cool local organization, it sounds like. People with terminal illnesses, mm-hmm. kids, they try to pull some resources together to give them a nice time.
Awesome. That's great.
I think medical care, but also just like kind of like Make-A-Wish.
Yeah. Where you it's a good, uplifting like, things in their life.
What can we
life,
do
you know?
To make your life
totally,
really special?
Or similar to Make-A-Wish where it's like, let's do something for this kid to maybe distract him from the fact that he has a terminal illness and like give him this amazing day. Right. I love that.
Here's Sabbath True by Royal Blood. Is it a 6-string bass that he plays? I'm not really a fan. I don't know. I know of them. I think they're cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That was fun.
It's heavy.
Yeah.
He must have some light strings on that bass. He's been in those notes.
Yeah, for sure.
Whoa, cool voice.
Yeah.
I wish I could sing like that.
For real.
Pretty cool drums. Ooh. So they're doing the ambient Kirk stuff with vocals.
Yeah. I was nervous this was just going to be a verbatim version. But that's cool. I like that.
That's really cool.
See, I think even if you're going to kind of keep the initial integrity of the song there, put your own flavor on it. You know, if you're not going to go the whole opposite route, have something in there that makes it yours.
This is pretty sick.
Yeah.
And it is kind of verbatim. I guess there aren't really any rules.
There's no rules.
You kind of just know it when you hear it. You know if it's working or not.
Yeah.
Here's why this is working, I think. If you're going to do it verbatim, you better just bring some heat.
Yeah.
Like, this dude's fills, listen to this. Like, his drumming is fucking sick.
Yeah.
These dissonant vocals...
They're rad.
...are a texture that improves the song.
Absolutely.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I love it. So eerie sounding.
It's very eerie. We'll see what they do with this little guitar mini part. With one bass.
Right.
Kind of a choppy tremolo effect. I mean, obviously they layer and overdub their records. Those sounded like roto-toms.
Yeah, a little bit.
Great background vocals.
Yeah, for
real.
Listen
to what's going on with the background vocals. It's really cool.
It almost sounds like a bunch of ghosts or spirits circling above you or something.
That was cool.
Yeah.
I think I just really respond to his voice, too. I'm gonna have to check out one of their records.
Yeah. I saw them play a couple songs one time working in that Jules Holland show. And it was like on their first album, I think. And unfortunately, I never really got into them. But I remember that being like, wow, that band's pretty sick. Because the two-piece thing is not easy to pull off.
I'm generally not a fan of it.
But like Middle Class Rut, those guys are fucking great at it, and these dudes are clearly doing well.
But with Middle Class Rut, it's like I've watched a lot of their live shit
because
I love that album.
Yeah,
and watching them live, I'm like, get another guitar player.
Yeah, right.
Who can fill it out?
Yeah.
I even feel that way about like White Stripes. I'm like, they're the best at it.
Right.
Because Jack, it's just so intensely engineered by him to be what it is.
Totally.
The number one song on my Dylan playlist is a song from Time Out of Mind, which is 97, called Lovesick.
Yeah.
And I was reading about it, and they were like, the White Stripes do a cover of it. And I watched their cover of that song.
Yeah, good.
I mean, it's fucking amazing.
Awesome.
But he also is like plays keys and his tone is so gnarly.
Yeah.
And it's hard to explain. And I feel like he kind of actually started all these.
These are
all a result of White Stripes.
Local H, though, they've been a two-piece for a long time.
Yeah.
Pre-White Stripes.
And I saw them live from front row.
Yeah.
And the gimmicky thing is fine, but I'm like, get a bass player.
Yeah.
Be a power trio.
Yeah, for sure.
Then you're not having to like jump through all these hoops to make it sound big.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the dude from Middle Class Red, I remember when I saw them on Warped Tour, I mean, he's got like, it's something weird where he has like a extra pickup on his guitar, extra output that goes to a bass amp, and all this weird stuff.
That's what the local H had.
Yeah.
It's like, well, or get a bass player.
Right.
You can look up, they did a rig rundown of Middle Class Rut. They're playing The End.
Oh.
In Nashville.
I got to watch that.
Because Premier Guitar is based here.
Right.
So they just went to The End and did a rig rundown. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
His setup is crazy.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, dude, get a guitar player. There's lots of guitar players. I'm sure you know many of them.
Right, yeah.
Are you saving that much money?
Right, exactly.
And then plus, it's like, you can overdub anything you want, mm-hmm. which White Stripes don't do. White Stripes is just White Stripes. But Black Keys, their records are filled with shit.
They eventually added a bigger band.
And
it sounds better.
I just heard it on Royal Blood. You know, it's like, definitely overdubs. So mm-hmm. what are you doing live? You're just...
Yeah.
You're having to make so many sacrifices to pull it off.
Yeah.
It's like, what's the... Middle Class Rut does okay, but they sacrifice... Their albums are overdub. I mean, there's textures all over their albums.
Yeah.
Anyway.
If they're not, I'd be very, very surprised.
So tell me about Pup doing Holier Than Thou.
Pup is a... Pup is a Canadian hardcore band from Canada. Canadian from Canada. Can you believe that?
They're a Canadian band from China.
From Canada. They're from Ontario. Toronto, Ontario. Formed in 2010. They got three albums, three EPs out. They've toured a lot, played a bunch of cool festivals like Lollapalooza, Reading, Leeds, Riot Fest, things like that. The organization that they are donating to is called the Marsha P. Johnson Institute. So the program is centered around the arts and community organizing in honor of Marsha's commitment to human rights and showcasing her flair for life and a self-determined artistic expression. It specifically focuses on the Black trans community. Marsha P. Johnson was basically one of the earliest drag queens from the 60s that was also an activist and stuff like that.
Cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting that the punk bands gravitated to this one.
Yeah.
Off and right. This band. There was also that the Clamps.
Yeah.
Didn't they do Holier Than Thou?
I think it's the Clamps. Yeah, I think it was the Clamps. I checked out a couple other tunes from these guys, and they're pretty rad.
Cool.
Yeah, I think this is a cool version. Re-listening, I think I'd prefer Off's version. It's fun though. I mean,
it's
there's
fun.
A lot of cool aggression in it, and it's very fitting of what this band is and other songs I've heard.
I wonder if these bands are going to start adding this to their live sets.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I hope so. I mean, if Off plays a show, I would love to see them cover that because their version's so good.
I gotta say, on Sabbath Truth, so far my favorite version is the St. Vincent version.
Oh yeah,
that gets like a 9 out of 10 for me. My favorite Holier so far is Biffy Clyro, which is also a 9 out of 10.
That's a good one.
Off probably gets a 7. So far, I would give this a 4 or 5.
Yeah, I'll probably give it a 5. Oh, what would you rate that Royal Blood Sabbath True?
Pretty high, probably a 7 or 8.
Yeah, that's I was thinking 7.
Even though they didn't take a lot of artistic differences, but they brought heat.
They brought Heat. They have their own sound. No matter, the cool thing about them is they have their own sound, even if they're doing something kind of verbatim.
These covers just remind me how good this song is.
I know.
This is, you know, a song a lot of people slept on. When I was into this Black Album era, yeah, when I was a kid, I'd usually skip this song.
It's real good.
I don't really remember why, because I love it.
I love those random Glockenspiel on that song, too.
They're like, you know what the song means? Glockenspiel. All right, next up we have Cage the Elephant's Unforgiven. 2-time Grammy Award-winning rock band from Bowling Green, Kentucky, who moved to the UK in 2006.
Right.
So they're like a UK-based band.
Forgot they moved over there.
Their charity is the Special Olympics.
Awesome.
Which everyone knows what they do, right? Yeah. The guitar player was saying that they chose the band unanimously chose this song because of how dynamic it is. And they felt like which I like this a lot so far. Apparently there's pedal steel in the chorus, awesome, playing the main hook instead of guitar.
Cool.
It'll be interesting to hear what they do with the solo.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really listened to any of their solo stuff. I don't know much about this band.
Yeah.
Not solo stuff, but their original shit. Really cool. Creepy double track vocal.
Love that. I love that the picking pattern of the intro is still there, too.
This is a cool thing that they're doing. So they have a hard pan double track of the vocal, and the harmonies right up the center.
Yeah.
Whereas normally you have vocal in the center, harmonies are usually pan left right.
Yeah.
So it creates this interesting stereo effect.
It's pretty cool.
They went and took away his will.
I can't believe it.
That steel.
If I didn't know that was pedal steel, I would think that was like a theremin or something.
It does sound like a theremin.
That's really cool.
It's not a traditional sounding steel,
right,
like country,
right,
steel.
Almost.
It's kind of dry and
because you can't hear it being every note being picked. I wonder if they use an ebow on it or something. It's like very constant. I'm digging this.
It's a big piano doing diamonds.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like Death Cab or something. Death Cab for Cutie.
Yeah.
Kind of those aughts, like indie rock aughts.
Right, Bright Eyes and whatever.
This definitely sounds like Conor Oberst.
Yeah.
It does sound like Bright Eyes. This immediately actually made me think of Bright Eyes first.
Yeah.
Which I'm a fan of some of those records. Some of those Bright Eyes records.
Yeah.
They're really fucking good. That dude's a good songwriter.
There's a lot of great stuff in the aughts.
Yeah, me and Isabel both love Death Cab.
Yeah.
This sounds like a Bright Eyes song called Lover I Don't Have to Love.
Okay.
I'll play a snippet of it when this is done.
Okay.
I mean, I'm really loving this cover.
I'm digging it.
Understated fuzz guitar. Not loud.
And it sounds like the mic
Maybe
is in front of the electric,
it
too.
It sounds like it's an acoustic that they put through a fuzz. That's what it sounds like.
Okay.
Or maybe not. It's cool. It's like a down-tempo Danger Mouse thing.
Yeah.
Double track, faithful solo.
Yeah.
Which, that doesn't bother me. If you're gonna be verbatim,
yeah,
this solo might be the one to do it.
But the vibe of everything, sonically,
it sounds like Broken Bells. It's very aughts.
Yeah, it is.
Indie rock aughts.
For sure.
It's pretty sick, dude. I'm gonna need to check this fucking band out too.
I'm digging this.
Yeah, vocally it never opens up. It kind of stays tight.
I kind of like that.
And it, you know, I'm kind of waiting for it to, but I guess it stays creepy.
Yeah, it's it has a very creepy vibe for sure.
Because even the harmonies are done in like head voice, falsetto. Yeah. There's no one really going for it vocally. Right. Which maybe that's his whole deal, I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't really listened to this band much. I've heard their name for a long time. But
so keep this vibe in your head, okay? Yeah. With this big, you know... These piano diamonds, all right? All right, this is a song from 2002. Bright Eyes lifted the stories in the soil. The song's called A Lover I Don't Have to Love.
Oh, yeah. Similar vibe for sure. What I felt.
Exactly. He kind of sounds like that guy. He's kind of like sad emo kid.
Yeah, totally.
It's almost like a lo-fi recording, too. It's weird. It's hard to explain.
Yeah. I like it.
All right. Next up in our playlist, what do we have?
We have Rome. We're right around by the Neptunes, which the Neptunes is a production duo.
Ah,
it's Pharrell Williams and this guy named Chad Hugo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So obviously he's produced a ton of cool shit. I'm just gonna go ahead and tell you right now, I'm not really a fan of this. It's just kind of like a remix.
Oh no.
It's kind of boring.
This says featuring Metallica, so I guess they're using stems.
It's stems, yeah, totally. But plus side of all this, right? It benefits an organization called Yellow, which focuses on children's education, music, and business.
Okay.
Which is nothing wrong with that. Yeah, the Neptunes is a production team have done hit songs for Britney Spears, Jay-Z, Justin Timberlake, NSYNC, Usher, Beyonce, Gwen Stefani, blah, blah, blah. List goes on.
So that'd be like having like the Dust Brothers do something or
exactly.
Fatboy Slim or, you know, DJs.
Yep. This to me, this is boring.
This is, to me, 100% boring.
Yeah.
In fact, I don't know if I can listen to this whole thing.
We don't have to. This is the whole thing. It's just like... And then they add little things.
That's actually pretty cool.
I just wish it was... Like, whatever they've added here, which we can clearly hear additions, but I wish they would have just... forfeited like Hetfield's vocal and had someone else do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they
you
did this.
Know a bunch of artists.
There's a remix of Bells also.
Yeah.
And what's weird about it is the actual vocal doesn't fit.
Yeah.
It needs a different vocal.
Right.
Like, imagine this, but with like Massive Attack female type vocal.
Yeah.
This would actually be a lot cooler.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
And it'd be great on like the Matrix soundtrack or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
For sure. Yeah, but...
But that, like, going for it Hetfield 90s vocals, like, it feels really out of place.
Like, all the sounds they have in there are cool. It's just... I don't know. And it's not that I'm not a fan of remixes or production stuff that Pharrell Williams has done, because he's a fucking badass.
I don't know much about his work.
I just feel like, okay, it is what it is. We don't have to listen to the whole thing.
I'm going to have to give this a 1 out of 10.
I'm giving it a 1 as well.
What do you give the KG Elephant song? I'm going to give that a 9.
I'm giving that a 9 for sure.
I don't know if I can give anything a 10.
Yeah.
But St. Vincent gets a 9. Yeah. They get a 9. Pippi Clyro gets a 9. All right.
Let's move on. Sorry,
this is,
everybody.
Volbeat. Don't Tread on Me. Danish rock band from Copenhagen. Playing a fusion of rock, metal, and rockabilly. Their charity is the Born BORNE Cancer Foundation of Denmark. So
cool.
A cancer foundation.
Awesome.
Now, I saw them open for Metallica in the Snake Pit in July of 2017. And pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see there were a lot of people in the Snake Pit who were huge, singing every word. So I was like, right. Well, obviously, they have some people.
Yeah, they've got a good fan base for sure. I remember when we went to Detroit, they also were opening that show, them and Avenged Sevenfold.
I don't think they played, did they?
Yeah, it was them and Avenged Sevenfold were the openers on the stadium tour. And we never really, me and Paul never really went and watched any the opening bands, but
this chorus is cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Like that boom, beep, boom, beep,
yeah.
Boom.
And changing the chords to kind of match the, still matches the melody though.
He's got an interesting voice.
Yeah.
Kind of an acquired taste.
Yeah, definitely has some like theater type singer.
Yeah, he's yeah.
Welcome to the theater. We have Volbeat.
I will say, "Don't Tread on Me" is one of my least favorite Metallica songs.
Yeah,
I might actually like this better.
I love this chorus.
This chorus, it reminds me of what does it remind me of? Muse, maybe? Because it's got that arpeggiated classical sounding melody.
God, I would love to have heard Muse on this.
Muse would have been sick.
They would have crushed.
Muse?
I love Muse.
Muse is awesome.
Yeah, I've seen them a few times live, and yeah, Muse is. I remember discovering them at a used CD store in Australia, and I found the Origins of Symmetry record, and I got back to my hotel room, put it in my Discman, and I was like, holy shit, what is this? I went right back to the record store. I was like, do you have anything else by these guys?
Yeah.
And that was their current record at the time, and they had one before that. Can't remember the name of, but...
I saw them on... in 2003, The Cure did a festival called Curiosa, and The Cure was promoting... This is heavy.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. They were promoting a self-titled record. And so it was like Interpol, The Cure, Thursday, Melissa Auf-der Maur, another big band. And Muse was playing a side stage.
Yeah.
There were maybe 500 people there.
Right.
It was at a big amphitheater, but the side stage had maybe 500 people in front of it.
Yeah.
It's cool. This is great.
I do like this one.
I was really not expecting to like this.
Yeah, I'm very surprised.
Anyway, fast forward to... maybe 2013, I was playing Outside Lands with Bob, and they were headlining, and we went to that show.
Dude.
Golden Gate Park, 100,000 people.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Oh, yeah. You can't fuck with Muse live. When they're headlining, their production.
Dude.
I saw them at Bridgestone Arena here, and it was just, it was mind-blowing.
Yeah, the production was crazy.
Yeah.
The dude has a chaos pad in his guitar.
Oh, yeah.
Built in.
Yeah. Yeah, Matt Bellamy.
This was surprisingly really, really good. I'm gonna give that like a 6 or a 7.
I'm giving it a 7. I'm not even a Volbeat fan.
Me neither. But that was really fucking good. Way to go, dude.
I really love what they did with the chorus. And
And then like the heavy parts, the tone was good.
Yeah.
The solo was pretty bitchin'. I might want to, if I had to listen to that song again right now, I would choose that one over the Metallica one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It wouldn't bum me out if that got played again.
Are you a fan of the song, the original? Is that a song you would jam?
I don't hate it, but if I put on the black album, I won't skip it. But it's not like one of those ones where I'm like, God, this song. I definitely don't feel the same way about that as I do Holier Than Thou.
Yeah.
Or even maybe Struggle With It.
Yeah, I know you're a big Struggle guy.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
good job, mate.
That was really fun and surprising. Tell me about Tommy Owoh.
Tommy or Tommy Owoh. So this artist, he's a very, very small artist. I don't mean that...
It's a female?
Female, yeah.
Okay.
I don't mean that disrespectfully. Even on her own website, like, I didn't know how old she was, where she's from. I'm guessing she's Nigerian because her foundation is Hope for the Old Foundation, which reached out to the needs of elderly people. Pioneering active and healthy aging in Nigeria, one community at a time.
Well, first of all, this is sick.
Oh, this is rad. Yes.
Dude, that break beat.
This is one of my favorites I've heard. When I heard this last night, I was like, shit.
This is fucking sick.
Yeah, she's rad. So she's primarily known as a like urban soul, jazz, and R&B artist. And she only has one EP and a couple singles out. I don't know how the dudes discovered her, but man, this is an awesome cover.
What is it remind? It's reminding me of like Tove Lo. Like what's?
Isn't that rad?
So good.
I listened to this one twice last night because I was so blown away by it.
When we get to the end of the third episode, we'll do like the best of.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll give out the awards.
Well, there'll be a full award show and everything. Yeah.
See,
red
see,
carpet.
This song is exactly why the Juanes one, even the Ghost one, this song makes some of these other ones look fucking stupid.
Yeah. It makes Weezer look stupid.
Oh my God, Weezer's one of the worst.
Yeah,
and I, you know, unlike you who hates Weezer, I actually like Weezer a lot.
Yeah,
but they phoned it in. That's like a total phone in.
That's phoned in. Yeah, let's just get it over with.
Like this production is sick. There's so much going on with the production.
Check this out.
This is the On Through the Never. This is the bridge, I guess.
Like, out of nowhere metal guitars, but there's some subtle hints of, like, overdriven guitars in the background, but it's real weird.
Well, they're just building a little pad. And I like that the kick drum doing the double kick right here. Mm. It's not like in-your-face metal. It's kind of like a soft, round, 60s-sounding drum kit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, right?
Okay, well...
Hello.
I'm going to give that a 9.
9, yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, she's rad.
Okay, now this is Jim James of My Morning Jacket. Rock band from Louisville.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of theirs for a long time. The charity is the Waterfall Project, which works to end the water crisis in our lifetime by bringing clean water to the poorer communities that grow our coffee.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
I guess like, you know, Colombian, like a lot of the coffee communities that we sort of enjoy.
South America.
Those communities don't even have clean water.
I know.
So.
But that's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Very cool, yeah.
I mean, this is definitely different.
It's major. I love that it's not sad, minor, normal. Not that, I mean, that's amazing. And ones like Chris Stapleton's are amazing, but I like that this is just, it's like happy.
Well, it's completely different chords.
Yeah.
So it's really just the lyric.
It's like he rewrote the song.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Well, I mean, that's what I did for Carpe Diem Baby.
Yeah, I did that for Seek and Destroy. I love this.
It's cool.
Nothing else matters with a smile on your face.
Yeah, it's kind of got a 60s, you know, that
totally.
That thing you do, you know?
Yep.
But I like kind of the chimey guitars. Feels very, it's kind of like light, uplifting.
I dig this.
Well, here's what I can tell everyone. Are you familiar with My Morning Jacket at all?
I'm not a true or anything like that.
When they rock, they bring heat like no one else.
Yeah.
They rock hard.
Good.
They're a fucking amazing rock band.
Rad.
So to know that he kind of has his tool belt, he kind of went this way with it.
Yeah.
Because he puts out solo records, too, that are very like 60s, 70s.
Right.
Very interesting lyric. He's a great songwriter. But My Morning Jacket, when they rock... It rocks as hard as anything.
Hell yeah. This version's fun, man. It totally sounds like the Ronettes, you know, or something.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Ronnie Spector.
Ronnie Spector, yeah. See, this is fun because it's just like a Jim James song.
Yeah. Like, I wonder if he put this in his solo set or...
Would anyone know?
Right. Unless you were, like, Is he singing the lyrics to Nothing Else Matters?
One of the coolest things I've ever seen. Have you seen Chris Cornell do the song One?
Oh, by U2?
Well, he sings the lyrics.
Oh, that's right.
To Metallica's One.
Ah, I forgot about that.
Over the song One by U2. So he takes the melody and chords of U2, yeah, but he sings the entire lyric.
I totally forgot about that. I got to look that up again when I get home.
I'm getting chills just thinking about
it. Oh, it's so good.
It's funny, and it's like set up kind of humorously.
It's beautiful.
Hey, way to go, Jim James, by the way.
Hey, Jim James.
I'm going to give that an 8.
I was going to go 8 as well.
Because points of creativity. I'd have to be in the mood to hear it again, but completely harmless, mm-hmm, fun,
yeah,
very fresh. I mean, the only thing that was intact in that performance was the lyrics.
Just the lyrics.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but so far, that's the only song that has done that. That has been a complete reinvention.
Complete rewrite that we've heard.
So far.
Yeah.
Yeah. No one else has done
close
that.
Close no matter how far.
Couldn't be much more from the heart, though, and that's what matters.
Couldn't be more from the original.
That's the only thing that matters. Nothing else does matter.
Right, exactly.
All right, lastly, we have Kamisi Washington with My Friend in Misery. Now, this didn't Kirk and Rob go to Hollywood Bowl and play this live? So this is like a jazz.
Dude, this is a trip.
Okay.
This whole thing is a trip, but it's bitching. So, I dig it.
So what's up with Kamisi Washington?
All right. Well, first of all, World Stage...
Oh, I'm saying Kamisi. It's Kamasi.
Kamasi Washington.
Sorry, Kamasi.
This is benefiting the World Stage Performance Gallery, which the World Stage is an educational and performance art space in Lemur Park Village in the heart of Los Angeles's African-American cultural community. And it was founded in 1989 by the late world-renowned jazz drummer Bill Higgins.
Okay.
And poet and activist Kamau Daoud, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Okay.
Anyways, his deal, man. So he's in this girl's voice is awesome.
So this is a band. That's not a... Is she
the... So he kind of puts together... He's the sax player.
And that's who Kamasi Washington is, the sax player.
He's a tenor sax player.
So that's kind of old school jazz in terms like he's the band leader artist.
Yes, totally.
And it features singers or drummers or piano players.
Yeah, and this thing has like a huge band in it. But he's got 6 studio albums, 3 EPs. Dude, check this out. As a side man, he played on... Ryan Adams Gold.
Okay.
Run the Jewels' 3rd album, St. Vincent's Mass Seduction, Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly.
Cool.
So pretty cool. He's doing shit outside of the jazz world. He's played live with Snoop Dogg, Nas, Lauryn Hill.
So he's a dude.
He's a badass. Yeah. He's only like, I think he's like 37 years old or something, 38. But yeah, Kirk and Lars of the Hollywood Bowl came on stage and played this with him and the whole band. But it's pretty funky, jazzy.
Well, I guess we can add this to the list of the only thing that's intact is the lyric.
Yeah.
I mean, this is completely different.
Definitely.
Unless there's a part coming up where it mirrors the song, the melody, the chords.
Not really. Whoever the drummer is an absolute boss.
Well, once you start cracking into that jazz world...
Oh, dude, It's like learning another language. It's like learning like Finnish or something.
It's just such a different level,
God, yeah.
Like
guys that can do this devote their entire life to
you
it.
You have to.
You have to.
And I get why. If any of our listeners out there have ever dipped their toes into jazz, either as fans or know any jazz people, which I've done a little bit of both.
Yeah.
They're some of the biggest music snobs in the world.
Oh,
they make metalheads look like pussies.
Yeah, for sure.
And once you really start to crack into it, you're like, well, I get it.
They're also the kind of people that say the Beatles can't play.
Yeah, they are. I don't get that. I think that they should know better than that.
Yeah.
Especially
Quincy Jones.
especially when it comes to Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
They should know better than that.
Yeah.
They should know there's more going on. But the musicianship in those bands.
It's insane. I'm not any kind of... I would never call myself like a deep jazz guy by any stretch of the term, but I dip into some cool... Obviously, the classics like John Coltrane, Miles Davis, stuff like that, but if anyone wants to dig into something cool, Jimmy Smith, badass organ player.
Mm.
Dude, Jimmy Smith... There's a record by Jimmy Smith and Wes Montgomery, who's a jazz guitarist, and there's shit on there that'll blow your mind. It's called the Dynamic Duo. It's from the 60s.
I mean, for me personally, I get bored.
Yeah, and we can turn this down and talk over it. That's fine. this goes on for a while. It's like a 7 or 8 minute long song or something like that. But at this point in the song, yeah, it gets a little...
Some of my favorite nights on the road is when I toured with Bob, his drummer, Wayne Salzman, the second.
Oh, okay.
He's a huge jazz guy. He teaches jazz in Austin.
Wow.
His other gig is Eric Johnson, by the way.
Really? Old Cliffs of Dover.
So if you to play that stuff, you have to just be really good. It's very heady. So it makes sense that he's a jazz nerd.
Yeah.
And anytime we play New York, he knows all the clubs.
Right.
He's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
He knows clubs that he's never even been to because he reads about them.
Yeah.
And so anytime we're in New York, I'm like, where are we going tonight, Wayne? As soon as we get done, as soon as we load out.
Oh, the Underbelly Jazz Room?
We usually play the Bowery Ballroom in New York. And I don't know if you've ever played there, but the bus parking is literally right in front of the venue. And there's a train station right there.
Yeah.
So load everything in the bus, immediately get on a train, go way up into, like, the Bronx and shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not a big jazz guy, but some of the most fun nights I've ever had is going in these little bars where there's just a jazz band playing.
Dude.
One of the times we went, and there was a whole line out the door of musicians holding their instruments.
Oh, like an open mic kind of thing? Or?
Well, so there was a band, and then the feature, people could just come up and guest. And they would call the song. And I was like, so just these jazz guys just know all these songs? He's like, yeah. I mean,
yeah.
Even obscure shit, they just know it. So these kids, it was like younger musicians.
Crazy.
Too. So it'd be like a chick holding a sax, a dude with a guitar and a little amp.
Yeah.
Just various brass instruments.
What did you play?
I played the congas and I was naked because awesome. Matthew McConaughey is my jazz icon.
Hell yeah.
But anyway, so we just watched that.
Yeah.
And they would call a song and we'd be like, oh shit, let's see what they do with this one.
Dude, and they'd count it off and do it.
Have you ever played World Cafe Live in Philly?
No, actually, I haven't.
You haven't?
No, just mostly, usually I play TLA or Electric Factory.
So there's an upstairs venue and a downstairs venue. Downstairs venue is like a big, like 930 club.
Right.
1,000 cap club. Upstairs is more of like, what would I compare that to? Like 3rd and Lindsley.
Yeah.
The old 3rd and Lindsley. There are tables and people eat and shit.
Totally.
But it's legit. I've played both depending on who I was touring with.
Right.
Well, we're playing the downstairs room, but we go upstairs to eat because that's where the bands eat.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a jazz band playing. And Wayne went and sat in with them. And he did the whole, like, hey, do you mind, you know?
Oh, like he didn't know them or anything. It was just random.
He's just a jazz drummer.
Yeah.
And he was like, he just let them call whatever song. These are like 10 to 15 minute long songs.
Yeah.
And it's jazz, so there's a lot of improv, but like the structures and like the changes.
Yeah.
And we were just sitting there eating chicken wings at World Cafe. And I was like, this motherfucker. So all that to say, if we were all in a club together in New York watching that 6 minute freak out,
right?
And I've got a cocktail, I'm having fun. As a listener, maybe I'm not cultured enough,
right?
But we put on Kind of Blue at the house all the time.
Sure, yeah.
I could sing you Kind of Blue,
right?
You know, me and Nova have I'll go da 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 da, and she'll go ba ba.
Oh, that's cool.
Because that's to me, Kind of Blue is like the greatest jazz album of all time. Because someone like me,
that or Birth of Cool, or you know,
Birth of Cool is a little too far out for me.
Yeah.
I have all the Miles stuff.
Yeah,
it's not as far out as Bitches Brew, but Birth of Cool, like half of it is like you can put it on and chill.
Right.
Half of it just gets intense.
Yeah,
so it becomes less of a like listening like background thing,
right? Yeah,
and more of like, oh, okay, I'm trying to understand what they're doing. But like Sketches of Spain, we'll put on.
Yeah,
and what else do we have of Miles?
That Jimmy Smith record I was talking about gets a. It doesn't get chaotic like that or where it's like distracting me. I mean, he'll start playing some key shits real fast,
yeah.
But it's still real chill in the background, and it's just like a trio, and it's so freaking good, man.
Well, this was pretty fun. I'm going to give the awards to the Tomi Owo.
Dude,
blew my mind.
Yeah.
The Cage the Elephant performance was really good.
Royal Blood.
Royal Blood, you know, as we got into the better ones, it kind of made the Royal Blood one lose a little luster for me.
Yeah.
Cage the Elephant and Tomi Owo were... my favorites.
That version's so good.
The next tier, I would put My Morning Jacket and Royal Blood. And then the tier after that, got to give it up for Volbeat with the bronze today, surprisingly, making that chorus really pop.
The chorus, I think, if they had done the chorus kind of more verbatim, I think that song would have gotten lost on me. But that chorus really was a shining moment.
Yeah, I agree. It's the chorus that really kind of took it up a notch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Made those verses worth it. All right, well, we'll do part three where we'll wrap it up, and then we'll give out the awards, because I will say, quality wise, pound for pound, so far with so many different artists covering some of the most classic metal songs ever, overall high marks.
Yeah,
the marks on this project are pretty high.
Yeah, I agree. Now I can see the Trues really not liking anything on here, other than maybe Corey Taylor or something. But
Corey Taylor's is one of the most boring.
It is, because it's so verbatim.
Put that in the Weezer category of snooze fest, phoned in crap.
Right.
And you know what? Cut the crap.
Cut the
what
crap. Yeah, in the words of the Clash.
Well, I mean, that was kind of harsher than I mean it. But talk about a cover that there's no reason to ever listen to again.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah. Now, the only way it'd be fun to listen to Corey Taylor's cover of that is if you were watching him live and he threw it in the set. That'd be fun.
Sure.
Yeah. That'd be, oh, fuck yeah. Because
don't get me
shit.
Wrong. I love Corey Taylor. I think he's an interesting person.
Yeah.
I like a couple of Slipknot songs,
mm-hmm.
but I think he's I like that he's a rock singer in 2022.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's cool.
Yeah, me too. I'm with you.
You know, I like that the Foo Fighters are still making music. And who are we talking about? I was talking about Kings of Leon to the Bob Dylan guy.
Yeah,
because he's a UK guy, and he was actually asking about you, because he was like, your co-host has an affiliation with Kings of Leon.
Yeah,
and I was like, you know, they're not my favorite band; they're my wife's favorite band. I was like, but we listen to them in the house, and I was like, honestly, a fucking huge rock band in 2022. Great.
Still making records.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Well, what can we say here at the end? I'm glad we got to hang out this morning. And cheers to all you Metal Up Your Podcast nerds out there. We appreciate all of you listening
dorks.
Every week. You bunch of dorks. We love you. Come here.
Come here, kid.
Give me a kiss.
Hey, kid. who are these people?
Your Uncle Ethan and Clint want to give you a nugget. Give me a kiss.
Come on, I'll give you a nugget
real
quick.
We're like the uncles that enjoy you're a little scared of, but you enjoy seeing, and we're always on the couch watching a football game.
Right.
And when the kids are leaving, we don't get up, but we're like, God, come here. Your uncle wants to give you a kiss. Say goodbye.
Yeah.
Don't be a stranger. And then when mom's not looking, we pull out our wallets to give them a five.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, do something cool with it, kid.
Yeah.
Go to the arcade.
All in one place.
Go to the arcade.
Uncle Clint, we don't have arcades anymore.
Yeah, whatever.
Everything's on my phone.
What do you get a new vape cartridge? Get vanilla. Get cherry vanilla. You'll love it, kid.
Get you some Delta 8, kid.
What are you kids chewing on now? Hemp? You chewing on a hemp necklace or something? Go get you a hemp cartridge.
But we used to have puka shell ones in my day.
What are you snorting Ajax? What do the kids do these days? What do you guys do? You cut up a little cocaine and heroin with a little bit of Ajax.
Any guys listen to Neil Diamond at all?
Do you do what I did when I was a kid? Where I put a little baking soda in a spoon with a little bit of heroin, cook it up. Put it in between my toes.
Yeah, but don't do that.
But don't do that, but here's a five.
Yeah, give me a kiss.
Come here, kid. I love you. All right, well, we love you guys. We'll see you next week on the Flip Flop. Take it easy. Take care of yourselves. Peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.